All right. Welcome to a four-part mini-series, Slip to Myself and Rabbi Abbey, on mental health and halacha. This week, the first of four is mental health and human dignity. Rabbi Abbey will be talking about OCD. The following week, I will then be following up with mental health and pikuach nefesh, cases, questions about where mental health considerations constitute life-saving circumstances within halacha. And then the last week, Rabbi Abbey, do you remember what you're speaking about for the last week? Right, v'nishmartem ba'ol v'nafsho seichem, the imperative to guard your life and mental health. Okay, so obviously a lot of these questions are very serious and very real world questions. For all practical questions, please see your shul rav. Certainly do not do anything based on anything that we discuss here. I want to look at two principal questions. The first question is, what allowances are made in halacha for the sake of preserving a person's dignity? That's number one. And then number two, is the definition of recognized dignity based on the individual? So that if you had somebody who was dealing with particular sensitivities, which can come up in the case of mental illness, it can come up in other cases as well, would we say that whatever rules you're willing to break for the sake of kavod habrios, for the sake of human dignity in general, will be broken for them, even though it wouldn't be broken for somebody else? Is it a subjective standard or is it an objective standard? So those are our two questions. What allowances are there in halacha in general for kavod habrios, for human dignity, and is it subjective or objective? So we start out with the basic idea that kavod habrios, which I keep translating as human dignity, literally it's the honor of the creatures, right? Or the honor of the creatures, I think, is good enough. Honor of the creations, perhaps. But the basic idea that kavod habrios carries halachic weight is expressed most clearly in a Gemara in Brachos, which is source number one. The Gemara, in context, is discussing the issue in which somebody is walking in the marketplace and he realizes that there's shatnez in his clothing. So, what does he do at that point? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Hamotzi Kilayim V'Bigdo Poshtan. Rav Yehuda says, quoting Rav, if you find shatnez in your clothing, remove it. Right, this assumes, I think, a level of awareness of fabric chemistry that we just don't have at this point. Like, I need to go to an expert to tell me if there's shatnez in my clothing. I don't know how I'm walking in the marketplace and suddenly it dawns on me that there's wool and linen in my clothing. Nonetheless, you're walking in the marketplace and lo and behold, there's shatnez in your clothing. You remove it, even if you're in the middle of the marketplace and we're assuming it's going to be an embarrassing thing. We're not talking about where you're taking off a sweater and you have a shirt and pants underneath. We're talking about where the person is going to enter into an embarrassing situation. My time up. Why? Because we have a principle in Chachma bein Tvuna bein Eitzel neged Hashem. There is no such thing as wisdom, understanding, counsel opposite God. Meaning that whatever your standing is, whatever your dignity is, whatever your wisdom is, doesn't matter ultimately when you're dealing with the honor of God as expressed in the fulfillment of mitzvos. Komakum sheishchil Hashem. If there is desecration of God's name, and the assumption is that by violating a mitzvah you are desecrating God's name, so we don't show any respect whatsoever for your dignity. We worry about God's dignity. That's the basic principle, that it seems halacha overrides human dignity. The Gemara then brings five challenges, and I broke them out into bullet points to help make that clear. Five challenges to this idea that mitzvos will come before a person's dignity. The first three are all going to be dealt with in the same way, by explaining that all three cases that we're about to see in which dignity overrides halacha, all are cases where the halacha involved is a derabanan. So the first challenge, meisve, the Gemara asks, we've learned, kavru es hameis v'chazu. This is actually the core case in Brachos that they're dealing with. They're talking about the issue of people who are attending a funeral or taking part actively in a funeral and which mitzvos the funeral overrides. So we learn, kavru es hameis v'chazu. If they bury the body, and then they're on their way back from the cemetery, and there are two paths they could travel. One is Tahor and one involves Tumah, and the travelers on that path are going to contract Tumah, and there are Kohanim among the travelers. So Ba B'Tahora, I added in the word in brackets, if the Avel walks on the pure path, Bo Enimo B'Tahora, so you escort him on the pure path, why not? Ba B'Tmeya, but if the Avel walks on the Tame path, Bo Enimo B'Tmeya Mishum Kavodo, even though you're going to contract Tumah, which is an Isser D'Oraisa, Kohanim are not allowed to become Tame, nonetheless, they escort him for his dignity. It's not right that he should walk alone. End of quote. So the Gemara says, why? Amai, lemein chachma bein tefillah neged Hashem. Why didn't you just tell me that halacha comes before a person's dignity? So Tirgama, Rabbi Abba, beis hapras de rabbanan. Rabbi Abba explains what we're talking about is where you'd be traveling on a road in which tumah exists, but only rabbinically defined tumah. The case of a beis hapras is the case, roughly speaking, where there may have been a body that was lost within the field. We're not really sure. I'm not going into the ins and outs of the beis hapras discussion. They don't really relate to our issue. But the point is that because it's a rabbinic law, therefore, the dignity will override. Second example of this, the second case, I'm going to say outside in the interest of time, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzado talks about how they would leap over caskets in order to go greet kings. Because of Kavod Malachim, because of the honor of the king. But again, this included Kohanim. How is it that they were allowed to do this? Leave aside the separate question in general about stepping over a casket, right? There's the issue of walking over graves having to do with the honor of the mace. But that's not his discussion here. His discussion here is Tumah. So the Gemara's answer, once again, is that this was a situation in which Tumah would only apply rabbinically. Tumah would not apply biblically because of the space in the casket between the body and the top of the casket. They really shouldn't be a concern for Tumah. There's simply a rabbinic consideration for Tumah, and that's what's overridden, in this case, for Kavod Malachim, for the honor of the king. And then the third case, which we will spell out, because this is the one that you see quoted most commonly, Tashma, is the third bullet point in source number one. They quote a basic principle, Gadol Kavod Abrios, Shadocha Lo Sase Shabbatora. Kavod Abrios is great, human dignity is great, it overrides what sounds like a biblical prohibition. End of quote. Well, that seems to be fairly clear then, that in fact human dignity overrides a deoraisa. Why? What happened to saying that God's dignity comes first? So Tirgum Rav Bar Shuva Kamed Rav Kahana Belav Lo Sasser. This is a great exchange. Rav Bar Shuva is learning in front of Rav Kahana, and he says, when it says it overrides a biblical prohibition, it means the prohibition of Lo Sasser, the prohibition against violating rabbinic law. Lo Sasur says you're not allowed to break rabbinic law. So when you say that Kavod overrides biblical law, it only really overrides rabbinic law, which is sort of quasi-biblical because the Torah says you have to observe it. So Achichu Alei, they laughed at him in a discussion about Kavod Abrios. There in the base medrash, they said, that was really funny, Rav Bar Shuva. They laughed at him. Lav de Lo Sasur De'oraisahi. You're back to square one. It's a De'oraisa. So Amar Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana says, Gabra Rabba Amar. He says, he's a great man. He said something. You shouldn't laugh at it. Other people, maybe. Kol mili de rabbanon asmechinu alav de lo sasser mishum kvodo shavu rabbanon. All lessons of the rabbanon are linked to this lav of lo sasser, and because of this person's dignity, the rabbanon permitted. In other words, it's true that lo sasser is a deoraisa. However, all the statements that come under lo sasser are decrees made by rabbis. And the rabbis themselves said, we are not applying our decree in a case where it will affect human dignity. That's the way around. The biblical rule of you should follow the rabbanan is still in place. But the decrees of the rabbis were made taking this into consideration. All three of these first bullet points here are challenges which are resolved by saying human dignity overrides rabbinic law. The fourth case is a little bit different. Tashma. They ask from the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, the mitzvah of restoring lost property. The Torah says, when it discusses what you should do when you encounter somebody's lost property, v'hisalamta mehem, literally in context, it's you shall not abandon them. Don't see them and be mit'alem. To be mit'alem is to pretend you didn't see it in the first place. Don't see this person's property and pretend that you didn't see it. However, the way it's worded in the Torah, it sounds like it's saying, and you shall act as though you didn't see it. the wording in the pasuk could be read that way, based on where the pause is right before this clause of Yisalam Tamehem. It's the way it goes, something along the lines of Lo Sira'es Shorachicha Oes Hayoni Dachim Baderech V'Yisalam Tamehem. Don't see his animal wandering in the road and abandon them. But it almost sounds like and abandon them. So the Gemara takes that and says, yeah, there are times when you are supposed to abandon them and sometimes not. Hakeitzad, how so? Im haya kohen v'hibe beis hakvaros, if you're a kohen and his property is in a cemetery, o haya zakein v'eina lefi chavodo, or you are an elder, and it's not suitable for your dignity for you to go get his property, o shahaysa malachta moruba mishachavero, or you have more work to do than he does, then you are allowed to walk away. So the Gemara is concerned with the middle case, where you say it's beneath my dignity to go get his property, right? So let's say, I come home, I get out of my car, and I see the neighbor's ball is sitting there in the mud in the gutter. I look at that and say, well, you know, I'm wearing my nice suit, I'm carrying my svarim. Yeah, do I have to go get his ball out of the gutter? It's beneath my dignity. Let's pretend I had dignity. That will be a case. So then I'm allowed to say, Vizalamta, don't get involved. So the Gemara says, why? Again, there's a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. It's a mitzvah from the Torah. Why? Under your dignity? That's why you're exempt? So the Gemara answers, Sha'ani Hasam, that's different. Because the Torah says, Vihisalamta Mehem, that you can abandon it. The Torah told you. So the Gemara says, yeah, well, Valigmar Minah, then why can't we deduce from there? I added the word in brackets, for kilayim. Why don't we deduce from there and say that just like when it comes to restoring a lost object, your dignity comes first, so too for kilayim, your dignity should come first. So the Gemara answers, Isura mi mamona lo yalfinan. This is a financial case. This is really not about an isur. It's not about, you know, kosher and treif and shatnez and tuma. This is a financial claim the other guy has. Why didn't you give me back my property? So if it's a financial matter, you're entitled to say your dignity comes first. That's the Gemara's answer in this case. And then you get the last case. The last case is regarding a case of Sheva Al Tasa, and this is another very important distinction. So we'll take a look at this. The Gemara talks about the case in which you are en route to do an important mitzvah. You're going to shech the Karban Pesach, you're going to do a Bris Milah, somebody is on their way to do such a mitzvah, and then they hear that they lost a relative. So the question is, should they become tamei in order to take care of their relative, knowing that will keep them from doing their mitzvah of the Korban Pesach? Not so clear regarding the Bris Milah, but regarding the Korban Pesach. And then the Gemara brings in the case of Mace Mitzvah. Case of Mace Mitzvah is somebody died, there isn't an adequate group to take care of the mace. For the honor of this person who passed away, we're going to drop everything and get involved in the Mace Mitzvah case. So the Gemara says, let's read it through. Tashma, the Torah tells me about certain cases in which one should become tamei or not become tamei. It's dealing in the context of Kohanim. Vila achoso, and for his sister, the Kohen becomes tamei, of his unmarried sister. Ma tamag lomar, the Gemara asks, why did you need to mention her? Harisha holich lishchot es pischa v'lomal es b'no. He's going to shech his Karban Pesach, he's going to do a bris. Shama shemes lomes, he hears that a relative has passed away. Yochol yachzor v'yitma, I might think he should become tamei. Amrit lo yitama. The Torah says, no, don't become tamei. You have your mitzvah to do. Shech your Karban Pesach. Yochol kishem shenem etame lem kachen em etame lemes mitzvah. I might think that the same thing would be true for a mes mitzvah, that he would not become tamei for the mes mitzvah. Tamad lomar vila achoso, the vav. I think it's from the vav. I think so. There's a whole discussion in Rashi there. La achoso hu de'eno mitame ala mitame hu lemes mitzvah. He wouldn't become tamei for his own sister, but he would become tamei for a mes mitzvah. Even though he'll miss, these are the only two mitzvos asay for which the punishment is kares, if a person skips them. Bris Milah and Karban Pesach. Now, it's not his own Bris Milah, it's his son's Bris Milah. Whether this is kares or not is a discussion. But but surely these are important mitzvos, these are biblical mitzvos. How is it that you're passing up on these opportunities? Sha'ani hasam dichsiv v'la'achoso. So the Gemara says, well, it's different because you have a pasuk. just like we did regarding Hashavas Aveda. To which the Gemara asks, Veligmar Mina, so why don't we deduce from there? Why don't we say from there to teach me about Kilayim, just like Meis Mitzvah overrides, so too for Kilayim we'll say don't take off the clothing that has Sha'anis in it? Shave Ve'al Ta'ase Sha'ani. Yes, this is a biblical law, but it's a Shave Ve'al Ta'ase case. It's a case of not acting. The rule may be that kavod habrios, human dignity, will override other halachic issues. Human dignity will override other halachic issues, even biblical ones, if it's a matter of inaction. Okay, so we have three exceptions now. Number one, human dignity overrides the rabbanans. Number two, human dignity may override somebody else's financial claim, Hashavas Aveda. And number three, human dignity may override a deoraisa, biblical rule, if you're dealing with a sheval tasa, inaction. So you might ask, if I weren't rushing so much through this, you might have the presence of mind to say, well, wait a minute, the Shatnez case is sheval tasa. I was going to ask that. Shatnez case is sheval tasa, leave it on. Why don't we call that sheval tasa also and say that you should be exempt? So the tour quotes the Rosh, and the Rama brings it in source number two to say that the case in the Gemara where we insist that you remove it is a mazid case. You knew what you were doing. It wasn't accidental. It was actually intentional. This is hard to sustain an hour edition in the Gemara. The Rosh has to have a different edition.
And then you do tshuva and you say, you know what, I really...
Yeah.
Or
you
walk into the fabric, every guy selling is Jewish and knows that you weren't Shabbos.
Yeah, but it's still your... It was that you were made. Yeah. Well, there's really more of a Chil Hashem if they all know... everybody in this world apparently knew what Will and Linda looked like. But yeah. The Ramah... The funny thing is that it sounds worse to me that we don't know what Will and Linda look like. It doesn't sound strange to me that the people should know. I feel like people should. Yeah.
No, because back then, I guess your garments would be a lot more simpler and weren't engineered, you know, and
yeah, but I think it's more our naivete about the world.
Yeah.
I think it's just, you know, we live at such a remove. We're the same people who look up at the sun and can't tell what time it is. It's our Pisar, and it's not that they were brilliant, it's that we are so dumb. But the Ramah writes in source number two, V'yesh omrim dim haya halovesh shogig. Some say that if the person wearing the clothing is doing it accidentally, then ain't tzarech la'asos b'shuk. Then he wouldn't need to remove it. He could rely on this sheva, on this sheva al tasa. So there is such an idea. There's more to be said on this about the Russian position versus the position of other Rishonim, but I'm not going into that right now. There is a lot to be said regarding this. But those are our exceptions where we say human dignity will override. There is another case which you have to look at because it teaches another important principle here, and that's the Gemara in Shavuos Daf Lamed Amud Beis. Yeah. Yeah. Well, what we're saying is you can't intentionally put this on and then, so to speak, hide under the cloak of human dignity. That's what we're saying. You can't make that kind of a claim at this point. It's less of a punishment and more to say, like, come on, pal. You set this up yourself.
So take it off and there's nothing to do with human dignity.
Correct. If you take a look at source number three, this deals with a case of a Talmid Chacham who knows testimony in a particular case, and normally there's a mitzvah, you're required to testify. However, the judge before whom he would have to testify is beneath him. So, V'ama Rabba Bar Rav Huna is part of a series of statements here in the Gemara in Shavuos. Rabba Bar Rav Huna said, "Hai Tzurba Merabanan Deyada B'Sahadusa." The Tzurba Merabanan is often a young Talmid Chacham, but Lav Dafka for our case. A Talmid Chacham who knows testimony. And it would be degrading for him to go to the Beis Din, which is lesser than him, to testify. Lo lezel, so don't go. He doesn't have to go to the Beis Din. So, Rosh Hashanah Breda Ravidi says, oh, I knew that already. I knew that because we've learned Matzasako Kupavein Darko Litol Areza Lo Yitol. We've learned that when it comes to restoring lost property, if he finds something which he wouldn't pick up for himself, he isn't obligated to pick it up for anybody else either. So I already know that. So the Gemara answers, yeah, but that, Hashavas Aveda, as we've already seen, is a financial case. not an Isser case. Hani mili b'mamona, that's a financial case. Avo b'isura, when it comes to Isser, I would have said, in chokma v'intuvuna v'netzlin aged Hashem, kol makom sheish b'chil Hashem, ein chokin kabal l'rav. I might have said, we compel him to testify here, and the novelty here is that we don't compel him to testify. That's the Gemara. That's our position. So Tosfos here jumps on this in source number 4, and he says, "Wait a minute, miu tema da'acha shevel tasehu. This is a shevel tase case, right? Don't go and testify. That's a shevel tase case. Uperk mishameisa bebrachos muchu tashari afilu beisur. And we already saw in our Gemara in source number 1 that you don't have to do something if it's a shevel tase case, even if you're dealing with an isur discussion." We already said that. So I'm jumping to Tosfos' 2 bullet point answers there in source number 4. Very handy, those bullet points that they had in Tosfos. The Yesh Lomar, he says, even handier is bolding things. You could answer, Dahasam Ginai Godol Hula Meis Mitzvah She'en Lo Kovrim. Lakach Shevel Taas Tashar. He says, first of all, you could answer, don't bring me proofs from Meis Mitzvah. Because if there's a body and there aren't people around to bury it, that's a tremendous disgrace to a person. And I would have said, you can't deduce from there to the case of the Talmid Chacham, poor guy, he has to go testify in front of someone who's a lesser Talmid Chacham. You couldn't extrapolate from leaving a body without being properly buried to the case of the Talmid Chacham. That would be my first answer, Tosfos says. V'od yesh lomar, or you could say, d'ksha'os in Israel yado lo mikri shevel tase. Alternatively, you could say, this really isn't a shevel tase case, because if you fail to testify, they might give money to the wrong guy. Or whatever, it depends on what kind of case you're dealing with. You're causing people to sin. So don't tell me it's shevel tase, I didn't do anything, because you are leading to inappropriate behavior with your failure to testify. But the key part of this that I want you to come away with is the point about distinguishing between lesser and greater disgrace. Because that's going to be a very big deal in our discussion, is the degree of embarrassment involved, the degree of offense to Kavod HaBrios. So Kavod HaBrios is now shown to override rabbinic law, to override potential financial claims in the case of lost objects, to override potentially a de'oraisa and a shevel tase case, right? Perhaps depending on the degree of embarrassment that's involved, as this Tosfos points out. I brought you a couple of other sources, which I'm just going to reference here, but you have them there on the sheet if you want to look at them, which should highlight the way that Kavod HaBrios shows up as a factor within rabbinic thinking. So, for example, in source number 5, we talk about somebody who has sinned so terribly that they're going to get executed by the sword. You have to be pretty bad in order to get to that point. You have to have done this intentionally with witnesses saying, I know that I'm going to be killed, I know I'm going to get killed, and I'm doing it on that with that in mind, and so forth. And yet, the Gemara says, we try to execute him in a more dignified way. You should love him. We're going to protect his dignity. We'll give him the less ignominious death. Or another example of it is source number 6, in which Rabbi Meir says, and this is a classic, Rashi on the Chumash quotes it, that the reason why, if somebody, or the lesson of the fines when somebody steals an animal, where we say that if you steal an ox, so you pay damages fourfold. If you steal a sheep, if you steal an ox, you pay fivefold. If you steal a sheep, you only pay fourfold. Why do we have such a distinction? So one view brought in the Medrash here in source number 6 is that the ox walks on its own. The sheep you had to carry. You look silly walking around with a sheep on your shoulders. I mean, presumably he does it in a way that no one's going to see him. That's part of the idea of stealing. Otherwise, he's not very good at it. But the idea is you had to reduce your dignity. Sashem says, I'm going to give you a break, since you had to degrade yourself. Yeah, we're dealing with criminals here. Another example with a criminal is the Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah, Perek Chaf, talks about Bilam and Bilam's donkey, and that Hashem kills Bilam's donkey after that whole incident. Why? Lest people make fun of Bilam whenever they see the donkey. That was the donkey that talked back to Bilam and made him look foolish. What do I care about Bilam's dignity? The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, whatever negative thing you can say about Bilam, you should say it is probably true. And yet suddenly we're concerned about the dignity of the criminal. So the point is, I bring you all of this just to show you we care fundamentally about kavod abrios, about human dignity. Yaakov Blitzstein, Professor Yaakov Blitzstein, also known as Gerald in some of his articles, made a very interesting point, which I thought highly enough of. I retyped it in source number 7. In an article, Kavod Abrios veKavod HaAdam, he points out something very interesting. He says, normally, the term kavod is associated with something else. It has a modifier. An example of this would be kavod haTorah, right? It's the honor of Torah. What other things do you find kavod associated with?
Kavod hames.
Kavod hames. What else? You can cheat and look at number 7. Kavod Shabbos would be one. He didn't even mention that one.
Kavod Adam.
I mean, he's talking about people. No, not kavod Adam. That's the point. Kavod HaKahuna. Right? Kavod HaMalchus, king. It's usually associated with something else. Saying kavod of brios defies that. It says everybody's kavod. It's not kavod associated with a particular standing. You're a kohen, you're a melech, you're a talmid chacham. It's kavod abrios. Everybody has the kavod. I have a typo in there when I retyped it. I'm missing a letter samach in that word towards the end of the second line. It should say oxymoron, not akimoron. Yeah, that was I missed the samach. I apologize. Spell check didn't catch it. But he says that's the value of saying kavod habrios, is to say it's not attached to a particular trait. It's for everybody. And when we say everybody, we usually, not usually, it's a machlokas, but it seems like it refers not just to Jews even. It refers to everybody more broadly. If you take a look at source number 8, you find a statement of the Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin. The Rambam is talking about the way that courts conduct themselves, the way judges conduct themselves. And he writes, "Ubakol yiyu ma'aseh l'shem shamayim." The judge's deeds in every way should be altruistic. "V'aliyah kavod abrios kal be'enav." The dignity of the creatures should not be light in his eyes. "Shari yudochez lo sashtei shel devrayim." After all, it violates their abanans. "V'kolshkein kavod b'nei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov v'machzikim b'taras ha'emes." And how much more so the honor of the descendants of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, the members of the covenant. But if it's how much more so, that tells you that kavod abrios, on a basic level, is for everyone. There's more to be said about kavod abrios, Jews and non-Jews. I had a shiur that I gave for doctors at one point on it, and if you want, I can give you more references. But the bottom line out of this is that clearly it overrides the derabanan. Not only does it override the derabanan, but it also overrides, for Hilchos Shabbos purposes, a d'oraisa with a shinoi. You could violate a d'oraisa on Shabbos in an unusual way in order to preserve somebody's dignity. And I brought you a case here that's a classic example of that. Source number 9, the Shulchan Aruch writes, "Kisem she'eno ochel behema." If you have a splinter, a piece of wood, which is not suitable for you to feed to an animal. So in other words, it's muktzah because it had no function on Shabbos. "Afilu litlok de'lachot boshinav osur." So you're not allowed to pick it up even if you want to use it as a toothpick. As I state the Shulchan Aruch. On this, the Mishnah Brewer writes, in number 10, "Va'af yish b'zeh mishum kavod abrios." Granted, there's an element of human dignity if you have something stuck in your teeth. "Shepa'amim shenera abasar shebena shenayim l'chutz." Sometimes the food between your teeth is visible to people. "Ugnayulo," it's degrading. "Aval pichein asur," nonetheless it is prohibited. "Dehayol alachin kisem me'esmo b'makom hasta'uda." Because you should have prepared it in advance. You should have thought of that. However, read the rest of the line first. "Ulufiza," therefore, "mizmino chaver l'su'uda b'Shabbos." If somebody invites you for a Shabbos meal, and therefore lo hayo efshir lo lachin shum davar me'esem alachas boshinav, you didn't have the option of getting your toothpick ready the day before. "Mutar lo l'taltal kisem alachas boshinav," you'd be allowed to move the splinter to use as a toothpick in me'lo davarach if you had nothing else to use. Now that's not a chiddush because that's only a derabanan. Moses is a derabanan according to almost everybody in this universe. However, in the Sharet Siyun, he adds a note. What if it's not a matter of moving the splinter? What if it's a matter of fixing it to make it usable? it's a little too thick. It can't fit between my teeth. I need to poke at it a little bit in order to shave it down so that it should fit. Now I'm fixing something on Shabbos. That's a del reisa, but I'm doing it in an unusual way. I'm using my fingernail to do it. Says the Shaar HaTzion in source 11, I am a prima gadim shemitzadeh dehu adin demutar likto makisim biyad. You would be allowed to pick at the splinter with your hand, kelachas bo shinav, to be able to use it as a toothpick. Imi yafshar lelachas below zeh, if you have no other way to do it. That's his heter of a del reisa with a shinoi for the sake of kavod abrios. So we're willing to go that far for it. There's an interesting note from the Or Sameach, which I reference here in number 12. I'm just going to say it outside. He says, you have to be careful of one element of kavod abrios. There are two ways to be concerned for human dignity. One way is what we've been talking about so far, like the case of the guy who's going to be walking around without his clothing in the marketplace, or the person who has stuff stuck between his teeth. It's keeping him from losing dignity. That's where you have this heter. As opposed to wanting to give somebody extra honor, wanting to elevate somebody, he said, they're not so fast. These heterim don't apply. It's about preserving what is, not about adding to the person's dignity. I thought that was an interesting distinction to make. I think there's room to argue it, but it's an interesting distinction to be made. What happened was he was asked a question about, it's fascinating, it's in the middle of his commentary to Hilchos Yontif. He was asked a question about whether a Jew would be allowed to play musical instruments on Yom Tov Sheni in honor of the king. The king's having a party. So is a Jew allowed to play musical instruments for the honor of the king? You're adding kavod, not preventing its diminution. Okay, that's Ayin Sham. See that in source number 12. But here is a big question. Why are we according such great status to kavod abrios? What is the underlying logic? We have now seen that we're willing to override the Rabban. We may be willing to override a Daoraisa with a Shev Al Tase. What is this about? Why does kavod abrios override in Chochma Vein Eitzah Vein Tivunu LeNeged Hashem? Why is it that we're willing to give this kind of standing to human dignity? What would you say?
Started with the item in the habit. They want to wear clothes because they
So Hashem was concerned.
Hashem worried about that too.
Hashem was concerned for their dignity, even though they were criminals. Yeah. Right. So you could make the argument that it's about, you know, the fact that, look, Hashem cares about it, so we should care about this as well. We should avoid people being in such pain. In other words, the issue is tsar. The issue is the person's personal pain. And there is a view like that in Tosfos. If you jump to source number 15, those who were here when we talked about hair issues, dyeing hair and the like, we mentioned this then, the Gemara that Tosfos is commenting on, the Gemara in Shabbos, talks about males not using methods of beautification that are usually associated with women. But Tosfos writes, is talking about somebody who has scabs on his skin, and the Gemara says he'd be allowed to beautify himself and to remove the scabs. Tosa says, "Vim ein lo tsar acher ela shemisbayesh lelech bein bnei adam shari." Dein lochatzar gadol mizeh. Tosa says, even if the only embarrassment, and even if the only pain he's experiencing is it's embarrassing to walk around looking the way he looks, that's already sufficient to permit him to be able to beautify himself. Now, without discussing the whole beautification discussion, because there are points that can be made on that, and its relevance for kavod abrios, my point in bringing this is simply to show you can make the argument that it's simply a matter of, we care about people's feelings. That's a simple way to read it. Zalman, you were going to say? No? Okay. Any other rationales? So I'll give you a second rationale, and that is Tselem Elokim. You are created in the image, either, you know, the way most people read it, the image of God, or as Rashi reads it, the image designated by God for human beings. However you translate this, Nasa Adam Mitzamenu Kidmuseinu, take a look at the Yerushalmi in Nedarim in source 13. This is a classic. The Torah says, V'hamta l'reacha kamocha. Rabbi Akiva says, Zehu kla gadol b'Torah. This is a great rule in the Torah. And most people stop there. But Ben Azai says, no. Ben Azai Omer, Zeh Sefer Toldos Adam. Zeh kla gadol mizeh. This is the book of the generations of man. That's a greater rule. What is he talking about? So if you continue in the Pasuk, they only quote part of the Pasuk, it talks about how Hashem created us. The fact that Hashem created us That is what gives it special standing. That's why you have to worry about kavod abrios. It's not just about love people as yourself. It's about recognizing that we were created by Hashem. That's why it should apply to Jews and non-Jews alike. We were all created by Hashem. Such that, in source number 14, we are taught that the criminal who is executed, you shouldn't leave his body out overnight. And, excuse me, you shouldn't leave his body out all overnight. And it's called kilalas elokim, to leave him out. It's like a curse. It's blasphemy towards God to leave him out. So that kavod habrios is not actually overriding halacha. It's actually honoring halacha. When we honor human beings, we are effectively honoring Hashem. Because we were created in this image that Hashem designated on our behalf. So that's stronger. In other words, the first view that we presented was that it's about tsar, that it's about a person's embarrassment. Our second view is, this actually is a means of honoring God. But then there's a third argument that I'd like to float. And this is the source that you were wondering about, Jeffrey, when you saw the source sheets that I sent out. I think you could actually float an additional idea. And this is a modern idea. This you will not find in any older sources, because I think it's only an issue that has been recognized bismanenu. The classic view was that a person's dignity is not really related to the person's health. Meaning, you have certain needs in life, right? Think like a Maslow pyramid, right? You have certain things that you need in life. You need to have food. You need to have clothing. You need to have shelter. And then there are other things that matter to you, but are less serious to your continued existence. And one of them would be dignity. Good to have. But, you know, if you can't afford it, it's either that or food. You're going to go with food. So I gave you an example, a quote from Rav Kook in source number 16, where he's talking about the which factors are recognized as overriding a mitzvah. And Rav Kook says over there, Mishpatei taras Hashem tamima shenozdu betaras hamuskol ha'ela na'alim hema mikol chukei mufursamos shel tov ra. He says, the laws of the Torah of Hashem are more important than all of the things that you label good or bad, umehem gam kavod habrios nimtza, including kavod habrios. The laws of God are more important, and he quotes you the famous principle, in chachma vein tvuna vein etzla neged Hashem. As opposed to, he continues to say, masha einkein hachukim hanogim l'chayei nefashos, as opposed to things that are life and death, kmo chukei harafua, like healing, chukei hatmadat habriyut, perpetuating a person's health, bahem eim hashkiach al chukeini musva kavod. Then, it's not about your dignity, your honor, but there are certain things that there's medical needs, and then below it there's dignity. However, psychologists are determining today that there is a real link, a substantive link, between dignity and self-image and the impact of that image on a person's health. Meaning that people who have a diminished self-image, people who lose their self-respect, will unfortunately end up either being careless with their health or even, Rahmana Litzvan, doing things to harm this health. I brought you an example from source number 17. Someone sent me this article just 2 weeks ago, and it makes a lot of sense. It fits with other ideas that I've seen elsewhere, and I excerpted a significant chunk of it here. I'm not going to read the whole thing out loud. It's the source in English on the sheets. That's hopefully people can read that. But basically, what the article contends is that they did studies of self-injury among teens. And they wanted to understand why teens would harm themselves. And not only that, but why certain teens, when they're subjected to pain, will endure it longer than others will. They'll continue when others will pull away. And the article, you can find the article online, it's available, discusses the different stages of the research. And what they came out with from this, and it's really a meta study, they combining other studies to do this, but what they seem to find is that the teens that they're dealing with find meaning in their injury. If you think of like a Viktor Frankl logotherapy type meaning, they find meaning in it. They believe that they are bad and that they deserve it. and therefore the injury is good in that sense. And therefore they're willing to experience it and even to seek it out, but certainly to tolerate. And they'll say negative things about themselves. They'll believe negative things about themselves, and that's more likely to lead down this road. So I think what this means in terms of relating it to our discussion here is that kavod abrios is a health issue. Not for everybody. You know, there are people who are more vulnerable to this than to others. But there will be people for whom kavod abrios is not only about pain of embarrassment generically, and not only about tselem elokim, but it's also a very real health issue. So those are three bases for why we would accord kavod abrios great status. I'm not pretending that the modern psychological discovery is predicted in older material on kavod abrios. But I'm saying that when we weigh kavod abrios issues, this has to be a factor, because it's something that's being substantiated in research today.
We also know that 97% of kids that commit self-harm do it because they think nobody notices them.
97%. That is a wild percent. Really? Well, what more evidence do you need than that?
On the Samalokim rationale, so how do you deal with that in Chachma Rinchun of Emetza? Because it's God against God then.
Right.
So why do you say in Chachma Rinchun and all this? Because it's just man's kavod you worry about.
Right, so you don't say in kavod. We don't say in Chachma Rinchun, then it overrides. You're asking for deraisas?
No, yeah, in general. Usually the things we say,
you're asking for a deoraisa. So I think the answer would have to be that Hashem designed the Torah with certain expectations, and it's just the Rabbanan who aren't able to...
God against God.
Right, but God can do that. In the same way that Hashem said, don't light a fire on Shabbos, but bring me korbanos. Right? In other words, God can say, yes, I created you with Tzelem Elokim, and yes, here are my expectations for what you're going to do with that. The Rabbanan aren't able, though, to overpower that. So... there are quite a few applications of the heter of kavod abrios. I hesitate to use the word heter, because really it's a mandate of kavod abrios. In other words, in a situation in which kavod abrios says, don't do this, you wouldn't be allowed to say, I insist on doing it, if it's really a matter of tselem elokim. It's a mandate, rather than a heter. I think that's something that's worth considering. But I grouped a few heterim here, or mandates, if you will, into three categories. Number one, preventing embarrassment in social interactions. So I brought you the Nishmas Avram in source number 18, who talks about a woman who lacks eyebrows, and the question of being able to tattoo eyebrows on. So those who remember the class we had on micropigmentation will remember that this is a derabanan that we're talking about. We have various reasons why micropigmentation would at worst be a derabanan and not a deoraisa. And because of kavod abrios, therefore it is justified. Another one, in source number 19, is a bad breath case. From Rav Avram Chaim Noah, in his Badei HaShulchan, on the Ketos HaShulchan, he talks about a person applying medication to alleviate bad breath on Shabbos. He says, "Umikomakom tzarech iyun." He says they permit rubbing some kind of medicine, some kind of powder, whatever it is, on one's teeth because of bad breath. But he says, on the other hand, they didn't permit an emetic for a person to make himself throw up if he's drunk and he's feeling sick. They didn't allow that. He says, I don't understand. Why is one okay and one not okay? Is one medicine now not? What is this? V'zeev Shalatari says, you could answer. They were lenient for Re'ach HaPeh, for bad breath, because of human dignity. That is human dignity. They were more lenient than with making himself throw up. But to get rid of intoxication, in matir mishum kavod abrios. There, we don't say that the heter for kavod abrios. He was that worried about his dignity, he shouldn't have gotten drunk in the first place. That's his argument. He says you can't use medication to alleviate the hangover when you should have thought of that before you had a drink. The I'm going to leave the drinking discussion to the experts, but that's the that's my point in bringing it is more of the bad breath point. He's allowing the medication.
Without this, you would have no wishes to use mouthwash on Shabbos.
So that's a really good question. That's what it sounds like.
No malacha. It's not like you're smearing.
No, but if it's,
he considers it a refuah, but
if it's a medication. Right? If you are to say that it's a medication,
yeah.
That's the question. How do you view things which are fundamentally about aesthetics? It's not food.
But that Shachanah for the Mishnah brings down the case to being able to walk where there's no air, but like spices in your mouth because of the bad breath.
Yeah.
Same idea.
Yeah. I'm not going to get into the whole mouthwash medication in you, as far as Shabbos
deodorant
and so on.
In those days, it was spices, and you have to crush the spices and all the other things. That are
then the argument goes that you might end up
mouthwash.
Right.
The spices you're carrying there are actually not; they're a decoy. In other words, their smell is meant to overpower whatever body odor a person has. It's not that you're applying it to your skin.
You just carry
the pill. Right. Another example of this is brought in Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa in source number 20, which is using an inhaler to diminish a runny nose if a person has a cold, and that's causing, again, a kavod abrios issue because his nose is running. So these are all leniencies that are meant to prevent embarrassment in social interaction. Another category is enabling social support. So I brought you the Nishmas Avram in source number 21, where he talks about somebody who's a diabetic and who needs to have an insulin pump with him, attached to him. And he lives in an area where there's no Eruv. So what's he going to do? He's never going to go on to shul on Shabbos. He's going to stay indoors all the time. He will have no social support, and people are going to talk about him. Why doesn't he show up in shul? They don't necessarily know that he needs an insulin pump. So the Nishmas Avram quotes here, Va'amarli in source number 21, Va'amarli Moreno Arav of Neuvertschlita, Mistaver Shiye Mutter Lachola Kazela Tseisim Amachshir B'Shabas Gam B'Makum She'ein Erev Ach Ener Rishus Rabin Gemura. He says, you could go out with this insulin pump attached, assuming that it's a case that's only a Carmelis, right? It's a rabbinic issue. Without an Erev, not a biblical Rishus HaRabim, imuloveisho sevashinoi, if you wear it in an unusual way, and he gives you an example, kigonim hu korech v'kosher es chagoras haban misaviv l'raglo, he takes the band that he uses to attach it, and ties it around his leg, or liyado, or his arm, v'tochiv shamas hamachad, and he puts the needle, sticks the needle in through that, so that he's not being carried really. Under the Kavod Abrios heter. And he continues in that regard to talk about this. And he says, the last line he says, you should know specifically, the concern is that if he never goes to shul, to daven, he never goes to a shir, people are going to talk about him. And that's a Kavod Abrios concern. So we'll allow him to go to shul with this. Finally, within this category of what it is that, or this area of what we permit for the sake of dignity, self-image issues. And I brought you one example in source number 22, the Levushei Mordechai. He deals with a case where a person only has toilet paper that has writing on it on Shabbos, and using the toilet paper is going to erase the writing with erasure that's derabanan. It's not a deoraisa here; it's an iser derabanan because you're not erasing it for the sake of writing. So it's only a derabanan, and he says because of kavod habrios, this is going to be allowed. What's the kavod habrios here? The kavod habrios, I think, is not an issue of he's going to walk around smelling bad. I think the kavod habrios here is simply his self-image. And the reason I say that is because we have quite a few other heterim. I ran out of patience with putting sources on the sheet. But the Nishmas Avram has a couple of heterim regarding children in bedwetting and patients in the hospital who need to get to the washroom and need to ring a bell for someone to help them. And they consider this to be, again, kavod habrios circumstances. There are limits to the kavod habrios heter. It's not all mutter. So one example of that would be a person who says, I'm embarrassed because I'm doing a mitzvah, is not able to get out of the mitzvah by claiming embarrassment. So mikvah is a case in source number 23, when someone says, well, I'm going to be among people who don't really understand the mikvah, and no, that doesn't work. That's not an option. Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuva is in number 23. If you have another way around the kavod problem, So then you can't say, well, Kavod HaBrios is going to help me. So an example of that is regarding the Nishmas Avram that I brought you here in number 24, regarding urine collection, where they need to use an additive that's going to keep the urine from separating out, and that's a problem to do on Shabbos under Ma'avet. So the person says, I want to do the urine collection on Shabbos rather than do it during the week when I'm at work, because it's a big pain. If I'm at work, I'd want to do it on Shabbos. If that's when it has to be done is Shabbos, then fine, it has to be done then. But if the issue, I'm sorry, is not that's when it's convenient, but the issue is Kavod HaBrios, it's an indignity to me to do it when I'm at work, then the answer is take a vacation day. If that's what needs to be done, then take a vacation day then in order to be able to get it done. You don't do it on Shabbos when you have other options. And then the last point within this, and the key point for that Tosus that I mentioned way back when, Tosus wanted it to be a gnai gadol, a great disgrace, in order to justify overriding halacha. So that's another element here where that has to be weighed here. It comes up in a couple of sources that I brought you in 25 and 26. The Stechemet talks about this regarding dyeing one's hair. And again, those who were there when we talked about the grooming issue, well, remember, we talked about this. Someone's hair goes prematurely gray. And he says, I want to be able to dye my hair. People are talking about me. Maybe it's like mine. It goes gray in funny spots. So the Stechemet says, not so fast. He's not himself. He's quoting a Rav Ashkenazi. And he says, you know what? The fact that people talk about you and point doesn't really qualify necessarily as Kavod HaBrios. Now, I think that's a little bit cultural. But that's what he says. Or another example, Rav Sternbach in source number 26. This always bothers me, this one. He's dealing with the issue of reattaching a finger for somebody. He got cut off in an accident, and you only have a few hours and before it's going to be unusable. So would he be allowed to have the surgical reattachment on Shabbos? As you know, is his case a Shabbos case, or was his case the Kohen reattaching it? No, I think his case was the Shabbos case. And he says, really, you know, it's not so embarrassing to be short a finger or to have a partial finger. It's not the end of the world. It's not going to embarrass you. He says, that's really only big embarrassment, like going out without clothing on. That's embarrassing. Having a short finger, happens. I don't know, that's what he said. There has to be a gnai gadol. It has to be a grave type of a thing. Okay, so what we've seen so far, before we get to our last and very important point, is the power of Kavod HaBrios, such that it does override derabbanans, it may override a deoraisa with Shevel Tasa. It's a very serious thing. And we said that it may be because of Tsar, it may be because of Tselem Elokim, and today we may argue for health issues as well. And we applied it to various areas, preventing embarrassment, enabling social support, and even self-image issues, noting that there are certain limits, such as it has to be Gnai Gadol, a very serious diminution of one's honor. That's in roughly what we've said over the last 52 minutes. But our second question, what about somebody with unique needs? Is this simply based on what society feels? Well, what about somebody whose needs, perhaps because of mental health issues, lead them to a situation where something will be very degrading for them, and it wouldn't necessarily be for others? What if you have somebody who's particularly shy about his appearance, and he suffers from something that is going to make him stand out? They don't want to be noticed by other people, and now they're going to stand out. So Rav Yitzchak Glazer, also known as Rav Itzel Lefitterberger, in the pre Yitzchak, argues that it is subjective. It's gauged based on each individual. And I have a lot more material here than we have time for, but I'm going to see what we can do with it anyway. And we'll get to what we get to. The Gemara in Bava Metzia Daf Lamed says regarding restoring a lost object, and we quoted this before, that if you are a zakein, you are an elder, and ein olafich avodo, it is not fitting for your dignity for you to stoop to return the item, then you are exempt from returning it. Got it? Remember that? Okay. The Rambam's formulation in 27 is instructive. The Rambam says, Matza sako kupa, you found a bag, you found a box, right? That's the language we used before. Im haya chacham o zakein mechubad. If you are a sage or you are an elder who is honored, who doesn't normally get such things, then you're exempt. So in other words, it's not about being a chacham. It's about being a chacham or stam an elder. You're an older man. You don't normally pick up stuff like this. And the Tur brings that, and the Shulchan Aruch brings that. That's one school of thought. The Ritva disagreed. And the Ritva, quoted in the Shita Mikubetz, says no. The Pitur, the leniency, is only about Kavod HaTorah. Now, and therefore it's not going to be subjective, it's only going to be objective. What's your standing? Are you a Beit Tamach HaHam or not? So there are challenges you can bring to each side. You can challenge the Ritva's view that it's just the Talmud Chacham because the Gemara didn't say Kavod HaTorah, it's a Kavod HaBrios. Right? It seems fairly clear. It's Kavod HaBrios. It's anybody. Unless you say that's only applicable for the case of lost objects, the Gemara in Shavuos brought the lost object case when it was discussing testifying in front of the judge who is lesser than you are, which was a Kavod HaTorah case. And yet it applied the Kavod HaBrios principle. It sounds like it should be for everybody. On the other hand, if the Gemara brought you the Aveda case, the lost object case, regarding the case of the Chacham, maybe that teaches me, no, that it's dafka about Chachamim. So the pre-Yitzchak stance, which he says in number 28, is that it really is all about Kavod HaBrios. That's his position. It's the Kavod which, we noted from Dr. Blitzstein earlier, is common to all human beings. And it is subject to your personal dignity. If you have, and therefore if you have personal sensitivity such that for you this is a big deal, that constitutes Kavod HaBrios. Rav Naftali Amsterdam wrote a letter to the Pri Yitzchak. They were peers, I think they're even relatives. He wrote a letter which was published in the Pri Yitzchak in source number 29, in which he disagreed. He says, the fact that you needed a pasuk in the Torah to tell you by restoring lost objects that a zakin is exempt, and you didn't simply say Kavod HaBrios, teaches me that it's more than just about Kavod HaBrios. It has to be Kavod for all human beings, min ha-enoshi, the human race. It has to be something that's a disgrace for everybody, not just for you. I brought it in 29. Kavod HaBrios lanema rak al davashu gnai lechol min ha'enoshi, for the entire human race. Yeah, me eze min sheyia, whatever the case is, meis mitzvah, walking around without clothing on, whatever it is. As opposed to where it's only a disgrace for you personally based on your standards. The Pri Yitzchak says, really? Then you tell me why it is that you were allowed to escort the Avel on his path. That's not a gnai l'chol hamin ha'enoshi for the Avel to walk without the Kohanim in his entourage. That's such a big deal that you're going to tell me it's a gnai l'chol hamin ha'enoshi. The Pri Yitzchak was not impressed and wrote his response in source number 30. Rav Eliyahu Bashi Doron, in his Chuvas Binyan Av, defends Rav Naftali Amsterdam. He says, it's still a bizarre, it's a disgrace for all Avelim, for all mourners. That's like all Min Ha'enoshi. That's like the entire human race. Just like Kavod Malachim is honor for all kings. That's his argument to defend it. Rav Eliyahu Bashi Doron also did not believe that it was subjective. He said, if it's going to be subjective, then everybody can invent whatever they want. I can decide. I don't carry bags. And therefore, I never have to return a lost object for anybody who lost a bag. It doesn't matter. I don't carry bags. Is every person really free to create this kind of subjective standard? So you really have a machlokes. However, I would argue, going back to my point about where Kavod HaBrios comes from in the first place, this debate only applies if Kavod HaBrios is a Tzelem Elokim issue. However, if in fact it is a health issue, then even if it's just one person in the entire planet of however many billion people, that's, you know, for them, this is a health issue, you're talking about a self-image issue, then I think we come back and say, this for that person is Kavod HaBrios, even if you're normally not making it subjective, I think it becomes so. Not really under Kavod HaBrios as much as a banner of Pikuach Nefesh and health, but I think that we do have to look at it in that light. There's a lot more to be said. I rushed because I had a lot more material than we had time for. I apologize. Hopefully it was somewhat clear. God willing, Rabbi Avi next week is going to be speaking about OCD, and that'll be at 8:30. Thank you very much.